Talk and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. I'm your host, Tiz, and thank you for listening, thank you for downloading, and thank you for your support. I have to make a big thank you to Gimli for hosting the show last week, mate. Excellent, and thank you very much for taking the reins of the show, and Gimli will join us at time to time when I'm unavailable, one of the other boys are unavailable. The news broke as I was on holidays that Wenger is stepping down, and I come back to a complete and utter fucking shock. I was like, I had to pinch myself, but I sat there thinking to myself, who else will go on? And Gimli mentioned last podcast that he was Steve Bald. What will Steve get up to? And I actually come thinking to myself, I wonder what he will get up to, because I'd imagine he will go, and I'd also imagine Claude from Arsenal Fan TV will be looking for a job, because he won't have nobody to take the piss out on either. But as we get down to it, let's welcome Tony. How are you, mate?
Very angry. I'm a very angry young man.
Yeah, it's...
apart from that, I'm fine. I'm healthy, just angry.
Healthy but angry, yeah, mate. It wasn't... I had no words after that game, but anyway, we'll get into that shortly. Schwinn, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, a little less angry than Tony, but angry nonetheless, you know, after the result. And of course, before that, I was accused of being passive aggressive on Twitter, which is always fun to hear. So, you know, living the dream.
What can you do? Okay, before we get into the Atletico Madrid game, just quickly, boys. Obviously, I'm late to the party, so I just want to touch quickly. Wenger's stepping down at the end of the year. Luis Enrique is favourite, I'm reading, to take over, and fresh reports, well, I'm reading over here that he wants a $200 million transfer window. Tony, you got anything on that, mate?
There's also reports that he wants $17 million a year in wages, which is, I think, make him like pretty much double the highest paid manager in the world. So I don't really read too much into reports. It's funny, I tweeted out yesterday about the odds of managers, so I was looking into it, and then I looked at, well, it was still on my laptop screen when I opened it just now to start recording, and Allegri has halved in odds overnight. So for English audience, I know everyone elsewhere has like worked their odds out differently, but he was 15 to 1 at midday yesterday. It's now 11 a.m. today, and he's now around 7 to 1, 6 to 1. So he's pretty much halved in odds in less than 24 hours, which I don't know whether it's interesting or not, but just what I saw when I opened my computer.
Interesting. What type of, let's say you were a manager coming in, what type of budget would you need to fix this so-called Arsenal squad?
I think a change of ideas would benefit us massively, and I've been saying this for a while. I just think everything's too stale. So I think we get a bit of a lift just from a change of ideas. In terms of how much you need, it depends what our aims are and where, what you're looking to do. To make that into a title-winning team, you need to replace pretty much every player in terms of a starting 11. There's maybe four of them that would maintain their place. So seven players, you're going to need crazy money. But to get back into the top four, I think a change of ideas and one or two players in key positions could probably do it. So your transfer budget doesn't need to be huge. But obviously, every manager is going to have different ideas as to who they want. If it's Enrique, he'll probably bring some players he knows from Spain or previously worked with at Barcelona. Same, Allegri will probably be looking in the Italian market or someone that he's previously worked with at Juventus. So it's difficult to identify players without knowing who the manager's going to be and what system they're going to look to play. Obviously, I'd imagine Enrique would use a four at the back, whereas Allegri would mix between a four and a five, as he's been known to do with Juventus. So obviously, if we're going to be playing five at the back at the time, you'd need an extra defender in the squad to what you would do if we're going to be playing four at the back. But it's very difficult to look at targets without knowing what system we're going to be playing, really.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, I'll go to you, mate. What do you prefer? Like, you're looking at next season, you're wanting a manager, and I heard you guys talking, Allegri was one that you boys... we're pretty favourite of, I suppose. You want a manager who's going to set us up defensively, or you want to continue this Wenger attacking playing style of football that he's been renowned to play in the past?
Well, I don't want a defensive manager in the sense of someone who parks the bus like a Simeone. I want someone who can organize us defensively. I think that's what's important, and that, I think that's a very, you know, important distinction to make. As Tony said, you know, Allegri is someone who is tactically astute and is flexible in his tactics, and you know, he is known to drill defense as well. So, of course, I think it's pretty unanimous right now in terms of Allegri being the number one choice for most Arsenal fans. But at the same time, someone like a Hardeem wouldn't be minded either by me. I think he has that tactical awareness as well, and he can drill our defense as well. But I'd die before seeing someone park the bus, and especially after yesterday, you know, watching Atletico, I couldn't bear watching them week in, week out. So I would like to maintain our values and our identity of being an attacking team, but that's not to say that there is no impetus on defense, because that's obviously our biggest gaping hole right now.
Yeah, you guys were rattling off your favourite managers. I've gone with Jardim. I think he'll get the best out of Iwobi for me for next season. So I was taking the piss with Tony that one during the week. So look, Allegri for me, he is the man. I think will take us forward. This Luis Enrique, didn't really prove himself at Roma. Yes, he was at a Barcelona team who, look, I often wonder that. I think one of us boys could probably take over that Barcelona team and might snag ourselves a couple of trophies as well, because, let's face it, they're no fucking mugs. I don't know. We'll just see what else happens, I suppose. Ancelotti, I agree with what Tony said, 1 or 2 years. I don't know. On Wenger, look, I wish him all the well. Wish him for the future. Well for the future on wherever he chooses. Cannot wait to read the Wenger memoirs, because I reckon that would be a really interesting read. I've always respected the man. Always loved the man for what he has done at Arsenal, and I wish him all the very best. And it's going to be a sad chapter to close, but I'm excited for the new chapter that opens. So, anyway, boys, that's enough dribble and shit from me. Let's get on with this Atletico Madrid game. Europa League semi-final, 1-1. I'm fucking Devo, but let's go. Tony on the lineup, mate. Was that what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much what I called for on the last podcast we recorded on Monday. I hope Jack would be fit so we could play that lineup, that shape. So in terms of team news, I can't argue. I got pretty much exactly what I wanted and what I said the team would be 3 days before the game.
Schwinn, you thought the same, mate?
Pretty much. I think there was some deliberation as to whether Peter Cech will start at all. And, you know, of course, he missed out this past weekend as well with a suspected hip injury, I think. So I don't know how much of that was a factor, but he was on the bench. So I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about that, whether that was tactical or, that's something that, you know, will change in the future. But just quickly before you guys get on that, it was nice to see Santi Cazorla, who was, you know, doing a bit of training before the game kicked off. And, with a smile on his face, I think he did some work with the ball as well. So, you know, that's always a very big relief. And, you know, it felt like it also pushed the crowd into a little more optimism before going into the game. Of course, Tony will speak about the atmosphere, which I thought was spectacular on the telly. But, you know, just another thing before the game that I think instilled a little more optimism in the fan base.
Yeah, I thought it was good. It was great to see Sandy playing. You mentioned Cech, Ospina. Look, I was kind of happy Ospina did play, because I think he's been playing most of these cup games. So it's only fair for me, and some will say Cech is probably the number one goalkeeper, the better goalkeeper. I think almost they're on par, and as we went through our ratings on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think I actually give Ospina and Cech pretty similar on the ratings for the season so far. So for me, they're neck to neck. I think let Ospina play, let him play these cup games, and that's what he's there for, to play them. Tony, on the atmosphere though, I noticed it with a lot of games throughout this Europa League, it's the away fans who are creating the atmosphere on the TV. Is that what's happening at the Emirates?
Not yesterday. Yesterday, we was really loud. Everyone was really up for the games. Best atmosphere I've heard in the Emirates in a long, long time. I don't know if it's because they position the mics near the away fans, so that's what you hear on TV. I've got no idea, but I mean, I couldn't tell you if the Atletico fans sung yesterday, whereas with Day Milan previously, I mean, Moscow didn't sing, so there was only about 10 of them there, but Milan, I could tell you songs they sung during the game, whereas Atletico, I didn't hear from them at all yesterday, and that's not, they may have been loud, but we just drowned them out. The atmosphere is very good. Just going back to Schwinn's point about Cazorla, I don't think that added to the atmosphere because most people didn't know. I only knew because I saw on Twitter. I thought, saw a few people tweet us or a few retweets with it. So I don't think the average person didn't know that he was there. No one spoke about it during the game. Like, oh, Santi was on the pitch. And it may sound trivial, but that's the type of thing people talk about in the stands. Because, like, you know, when there's an injury break or obviously that when there's like nothing going on, the ball's just being passed about, people do talk to each other. And that's the type of thing people would say, oh, Santi, he was here before the game, he was back kicking the ball or whatnot. But no one said that. So I don't think the average person knew. So I don't think that aided the atmosphere.
Yeah, okay. And I'd imagine he's going to roll out most games now throughout to the end of the season, with Wenger stepping down at the end of the season as well. And I hope the Emirates is full of excitement and atmosphere throughout our last few home games. So, okay, let's get on to this actual fucking game because there's not a lot to talk about really, but the... And I was talking, Schwinn, what's the Croatians fullback? What's his name?
Versaico.
That's the bloke. So he got the yellow card on the second minute, and then obviously followed by the red card in the 10th minute. Well warranted, Tony?
I've not seen it back. I've only seen it at the time, and they're both over the other side of the pitch from me, obviously him being the right back. I thought it was harsh. I could be completely wrong and they could have been horrific tackles, but I think given the time in the game, there was probably a yellow between the two tackles. I understand what the ref's done. He knows that they like to try and break up play early in midfield, and the first yellow, which was on the foul on Jack, he's obviously just, the right back's just gone to break up play, and the ref knows that that's what Atletico are about, trying to break play down as early as possible, and I think he's tried to make an example saying you can't do that, I'll book you. So he's obviously done that. And then the second one again looked like more of a booking, but I'm surprised given that he'd given him the first booking and it was so early in the game that he produced a red card.
Yeah, Schwinn, for me the second booking, mate, he on the TV they replayed it a few times and it was pretty fair for me.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to give the credit here to the referee because every decision in football, whether it's in a game or across games, has to be taken in a microcosm of that incident itself. You know, we've heard about referees who've, you know, set precedent in a wrong way. And Clattenburg famously said he let Tottenham implode, which is hilarious. But when it happens to your team, it's pretty, you know, sad and infuriating. I have to say that both those instances were yellow cards, and by definition, the player had to be sent off. When you look at it from the outside, you know, it's harsh to see, of course, 10 minutes in and, you know, one team goes a man down. It's harsh when you look at the script. But when you look at those incidents, I don't think anyone will argue that those were not yellow cards, and two yellow cards always equal a red card. So very, very strong decision from the referee, and he has my support for that.
I agree totally. Now, this is the part that worries me, boys, and spin a positive on it, I don't care, but it took us 51 minutes. Lacazette scored the header, assisted by Wilshere, Tony, and the Atletico Madrid were down to 10 men, and like I say, 51 minutes before we got a goal.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to spin a positive on it, but I don't really think it's too much of a negative. It didn't change them how they played because they were going to always put 8 men behind the ball and leave 2 up top. It just changed that they, instead of leaving 2 up top, they had 1 on top. So they provided much less of a threat going forward and on the counter. But defensive-wise, there was no difference from really, apart from getting the ball out from the back a little bit easier, but there was no difference between playing against 10 and playing against 11. it's not like we didn't dominate the ball. It's not like we got dominated with 10 men. We just couldn't break them down. But we knew that before the game that was going to be an issue. And I don't think them having 10 men really made that much of a difference about it. I mean, I think Lacazette, when he hit the post, was against 11. I think, might be wrong. And then obviously, yeah, and then Oblak made the save from the header. And I think that was also against 11. So it wasn't like the 10 made a grave difference in the way they defended. It probably pushed them back a few yards, if anything, and made it even harder to break them down. I thought they were very clever, and I hate the phrase game management, but they managed the game very, very well. And, I mean, Simeone obviously done his work on Arsenal, because what they ended up doing is putting the four biggest blokes they could find in the back line and letting us have the ball wide and saying, go on then, cross it. Yeah. And I mean, we'll probably get onto it, but I actually thought our crosses from both sides, from Hector and Nacho, on the whole, were quite good. It was much better delivery than we're used to. But they were very clever in saying, go on, cross the ball you want. They backed their centre-backs against anyone that we're going to have attacking a header. So I think, in a way, as much as it's horrible and people can claim they play anti-football, you have to give them credit for what they've done.
Since you brought it up, and just quickly, I'll touch base on some quick stats, and I know you're not a man of stats, but I bring this up because there was a few Arsenal fans that I've seen criticising it. So there's 28 shots on targets. 28 shots in total. 8 of them shots were on target. 13 shots were off target. 17 shots blocked, and 1 off the woodwork. So there was a very good goalkeeper there, and the 8 shots on target, I can only think of about 2 or 3 that were really, really good shots. That Lacazette header, which we discussed before the podcast, was, as you said, Tony, an average goalkeeper or a good goalkeeper would save it. I think you used the words. And the other one with Ramsey, an excellent goalkeeper would save. So, you've got to give a bit of credit there where credit's due. It wasn't 28 shots for me that reflected that.
I mean, it's difficult because, as you said, 17 of them are blocked, but they've got 8 men behind the ball at all times. I don't think there was really a time when they didn't have 8 men behind the ball. So, and they, as I said, they played very centrally and let us have the ball wide. So just by law of averages, if you've got 8 men in front of the goal and pretty much in front of the goal, not spread out wide, chances are quite a lot of shots are going to hit them. And if we'd have carried on passing and not taken them shots, people go, oh, same old Arsenal trying to pass the ball into the net. I think it's just one of them. You can use it to bash Arsenal if you want, but it's not. I don't really think it's a fact. I think it's pretty obvious. If you've got loads of the ball and the other team have got 8 men standing in front of the goal, you're going to have to take some pot shots, and a lot of them are going to hit bodies in the way.
I think it's frustrating, isn't it, at the end result. If we had won that game 2-0 or even 1-0, we'd be a lot more pumped up and a bit more, excited and whatnot. But because they got that away goal, it's... I said to you earlier, it's not the word frustrating, it's fucking cruel. I think that's what Schwinn said to me. But anyway, Schwinn, Tony did mention that they were crossing the ball and whatnot, and I worry about when you see Arsenal crossing the ball and you've got a little bloke like Lacazette in the middle.
Sure, but that leap though, I mean, you have Diego Godin, who is probably the tallest player on the pitch, barring the goalkeepers, and Lucas Hernandez on Lacazette, who arguably is the shortest player on the pitch. And he leapt over both of them and beat Oblak, who, we've just spoken about, had a very good performance. Just going back to those stats, I wouldn't pay too much attention to those, because there were a couple of chances that got blocked but were golden chances. The one that comes to mind right away is when Danny Welbeck had a very cute back heel and he found Aaron Ramsey. And that shot was blocked from 6 yards out. Mm. Similarly, Aaron Ramsey found himself on the back post once late into the game after Atletico had equalized. And that was blocked as well. That was bound for goal, I would say. So I wouldn't really pay too much attention to that. I think anyone who watched the game yesterday would know that we had enough chances to capitalize. And that just didn't happen. But Tony's point is absolutely right about the crosses, because I think that's something we've missed. We push our fullbacks high up, and what we see is them playing square passes and not really, contributing from wide areas. But yesterday, our crossing game was very, very good. Not just trying to find people on the back post, which was open most of the time because of them being a man down, but also having, you know, playing grounded balls and trying to find the man at the near post every now and then. So I thought we played a very good crossing game, and it's just a pity that we couldn't capitalize on it.
So we're cruising along after that goal on the 60th minute, you know, and the 65th minute, they're making substitutions. 75th minute, they're still making substitutions. I'm type of thinking to myself, are we going to make a substitution ourselves? And then I looked at our bench and I thought, well, we're up 1-0 here still at this stage. Is there a need to make a substitution? I'll go to Tony.
I look, when the team news come out, I looked at the bench and thought, well, I actually said to someone, we're playing with 11 men today. There was no one on that bench that was going to do anything. Mm. So then we go 1-0 up, and look, now everyone's saying it. One, no one in the ground was calling for it. I can only talk about what I hear in the ground. No one in the ground was saying we need to make a sub, and they usually do. And, I mean, who would you have changed? Now we've drawn the game, people say, oh, you should have taken Welbeck off for Iwobi. There was not a single person saying that at the time. I'd love to go back through Twitter before the goal and see who was saying that. And I don't know. I've not been on Twitter since, so I don't know if many people were saying that. But I know absolutely no one in the ground was saying it, and it also didn't seem logical. But in hindsight, people will go, oh, he should have done that. And I've also heard people say after the game, oh, we should have just shut up shop at 1-0 and taken a 1-0 lead over there. But again, no one was saying that at the time. It's all in hindsight. If we would have shut up shop and it had finished 1-0, people would be moaning. They wouldn't be going, oh, yeah, we've gone to Atletico with a 1-0 lead. They'd be going, fuck's sake, the tie should be over. Mm. And that's exactly what people would say. So I think it's the reason that I always either try and say my team, like my preferred lineup in advance, or I comment on the lineup as it comes out, because then I can't be a hypocrite after. And I think what this stinks of is people saying one thing at the time, and then because the result's gone a slightly different way, they're saying the complete opposite to what they were saying. So it's like they're using it to criticise Wenger or criticise the club when it's exactly what they would have done. But for me, there was never, I still don't see that any of the subs would have been a great shout. As I said, even if you bring Iwobi on, who was the only attacking player on the bench, or realistic attacking player, because there's no way Eddie's going to play in a game of that magnitude. If you bring Iwobi on, as I said, I assume it would be Welbeck, maybe Jack. But he doesn't offer, if it is Welbeck, he doesn't run in behind like Welbeck does. He doesn't score the goals that Welbeck does. And yeah, he probably gets more assists and is better at sliding the ball through. But we didn't have that opportunity. The ball wasn't in the middle of the pitch to be playing them cute passes. Maybe he's better running with the ball than Welbeck, but they were doubling up because they had 8 men behind the ball. So look, we all know Iwobi struggles to beat one man. He's not going to beat 2 men. I don't think there was an opportunity for anyone to beat 2 men because of how tightly they packed the defence. So for me, I don't think that any of the subs would have made sense. Of course, in hindsight, you just go, oh, we should have done absolutely anything different because what we did do didn't work. Mm. But I don't think that's what people were saying at the time.
Schwinn, and I'll go to you now. Chambers, Holding, Klasinac, all sitting on the bench, and I haven't got to the goal yet, so we won't go to the goal. But just to that point, do you think, did you think, oh shit, maybe we should switch formations and throw one of them defenders on, and like, and it's not Arsenal-like, but park the bus?
Never in a million years, and I wouldn't believe anyone who tells you that anyway. You know, if someone claims that this is what they wanted, I'd be surprised. And I'd probably accuse them of lying, because with them, you know, a man down, it's a golden opportunity to go in for the kill. You know, we spoke about this briefly over the game, before we started recording, so I'm not going to get into it a whole lot, but we just didn't have options on the bench, as Tony said, and it made absolutely no sense to make a defensive one whatsoever. I could understand the argument for an offensive one if we had someone on the bench. You know, let's assume that Mkhitaryan was playing and Welbeck was sitting on the bench. Yes, we can make a sub and try and something, you know, try and do something else. You know, bring in some height, an aerial threat perhaps, someone with a little more running power who can contribute defensively as well as offensively. But considering the bench, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree too. I never once thought about it, and I never looked at any of them players, and I thought, oh, maybe, I'll be honest, one thing I did think is, like, how will Kashani go, because we know he has been carrying a bit of an injury, and I looked and I thought, oh, there's Chambers there, I'd imagine that's why he's type of there, just in case, but other than that, I didn't see anything else. 82nd minute, and here it gets fucking messy. I don't even know what to say here, but I'll let you go, Tony. Griezmann gets the goal to draw it, right?
There's just so many mistakes. I mean, I've seen people blaming Welbeck, and what he done wasn't good, but if you lose the ball 30 yards from your opponent's goal, I don't think you can be blamed for conceding. Like, this is one of them goals where I always say when a goal's scored, unless there's a major howler, there tends to be two or three mistakes that are minor and one person gets picked on. But Welbeck made that run a few times where he cut inside earlier in the game. It was Thomas Partey. I'm not sure if Savic was on by then. And it kind of opened up a lot of space. It probably was a bit of a stupid decision for him to try and make that run. But when it's worked two or three times before, I don't think you can overly blame him. Then secondly, and probably more damning than anything else, our defensive line, go and have a look at it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go and have a look at it. Nacho's 5 yards deeper than anyone else for no reason. Koscielny's ahead of Griezmann for no reason. And if you're going to play a split centre-back system where you have one in front, one behind, you have to be one in front, one behind. So Koscielny's position in front of him would have been okay if Mustafi sweeped round and was behind Griezmann. So it's like one on his toes, one on his back. But Mustafi was 15 to 20 yards across the pitch. In the right line, he should have been, as in just behind Griezmann, but 15, 20 yards away. It's criminal. Like, that is such poor defending. And that's the type of thing, because you don't really know who to blame there. It doesn't get labelled as a mistake. But for me, that's as big a mistake as any, because that's a reoccurring one. And then Griezmann's ahead of Koscielny, and I think he does really well to get back. He has a combination of pace and strength, and he gets himself in a good position. You think, oh, we're kind of safe now. And all he has to do is put the ball absolutely anywhere except at his face. It's criminal. Like, just defend first. I think we're so worried with Arsenal, with defenders trying to be footballers. Do your job first. Your title, your job role is a defender. So defend. I can see what he was trying to do. I don't agree with it at all. But
had he hooked that ball, explain to me and the listeners, what was he trying to do?
So if he hooks that ball over his head, the speed that Griezmann's running forward, there's no way he'd have to run another 3, 4, 5 yards to stop and then turn around. So he's got a 10-yard run, whereas Nacho or Mustafi have only got a few yard run, and they can pick up the ball and we can start attacking again. But as a defender, it's not his job to start an attack in that situation. Just defend first. He could have put that ball out for a throw-on. He could have nudged it across to Mustafi. He could have put it out for a corner. It would have been a bit dangerous. He probably could have knocked it back to Ospina. I wouldn't have gone with that option, but the option he tried was probably the worst of the five options he had available. And it's just criminal. And after that, I think Ospina gets a bit unlucky and Mustafi slips. And I've seen people blame Mustafi for it, and whilst I dislike Mustafi, as regular listeners will know, I don't think you can put any blame on him for that goal. I thought he'd done his usual a few stupid things yesterday, dived in when he didn't need to, but I thought on the whole he had quite a good game.
Yeah, look, I can't fault Mustafi. He did try his hardest, and to be honest, he was in that position where it wasn't his blue to try and get out of jail anyway, so. You want to add anything there, Schwinn?
No, I think Tony's covered that just about fine. I think what I will add just very quickly is that, you know, it was that one error. I've seen a lot of hate for Koscielny and Mustafi, and, you know, maybe even to an extent Monreal for not being disciplined in the line. But I think otherwise they all had decent games. You know, we spoke about Monreal playing some decent balls. And I think Koscielny and Mustafi also had a decent game. But, you know, of course, you cannot gloss over something so costly at the end of the day. But that's just something I wanted to add above and beyond what Tony said.
Yeah, okay. Look, if I'm coming through a little bit light, it is absolutely fucking pissing down here, so I apologise for that quality of sound. I don't know if it's, you guys can hear it in the background or not. Man of the match, Tony?
I have given Lacazette a lot of stick on this podcast, and I don't think it's been undeserved when I've done it, and I know a lot of people have argued with me when I have given him stick. I am not biased in any way. I think he was the man of the match by an absolute distance yesterday. I thought it was his best performance for us by that I've seen in, like, not close. It's not only he was best performance by a little bit. I think it was his best performance by a long, long way. I think other players played well, but I don't think anyone can compare to Lacazette yesterday.
And Schwinn, you got a man of the match, mate?
I'll have to give it to Oblak. I mean, Lacazette was the best player in an Arsenal shirt, but I think Oblak made a couple of saves, maybe even three saves, that were just super. And, you know, it's not something you would expect a good goalkeeper to make. It's a top three goalkeeper in the world save. So, you know, I mean, I think he kept them in the tie despite them sitting back. So, Jan Oblak for me.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me. Granit Xhaka will probably get my vote again, boys. He was outstanding once again in the midfields, controlled everything, and kept it rolling.
Normal duty resumes then.
I don't know. Oblak was good, though, wasn't he? Shit, I can see why he's worth 80 million, though. Yeah, probably Oblak if I was being serious. I did think Xhaka was good though, but I might be a little biased on that too. So
he did have a good game.
Yeah, I thought Welbeck had a good game as well. I thought
Welbeck was exceptional in the first half and probably died out a bit in the second. And it was so frustrating. Anyone that sits near me probably got sick of me because we isolated him one-on-one with Griezmann so many times when Griezmann was playing on the right for the first half of the second half. And he just didn't go at him. And Griezmann had no interest in being back there. He was back there in body. He didn't know where to stand. He stood there because he'd been told to, but he didn't really know what he was doing. And we isolated Welbeck one-on-one so many times. And I was thinking, just run at him. I don't care if you run off the pitch. If you run at him 10 times, 3 or 4 times you're going to beat him. The other 6 times you may frustrate the hell out of us, but I'll take them averages.
Yeah.
He didn't, and it was doing my head in. I was screaming the whole second half. As I said, people sitting around me were really not best pleased with me.
I thought, look, if anybody, and I don't want to pick on, I'm not going to go down to the picking on players. Kashani, obviously that one mistake, but as we said, I didn't think he had a bad game, but that one mistake really does cloud his performance. Bellerin, yeah, he was usual Bellerin. I thought Ramsey and Jack were a little bit quiet. What was your take on that midfield, boys? I'll go to
For me, Jack had a good game, and I would say he had a better game than Ramsey. I think Ramsey was anonymous mostly yesterday. I mean, he had a couple of chances, but you know, you expect him to get into the box and you know, try and get a shot off every now and then, but I don't think he contributed a whole lot in midfield. Now, it could be tactical, so you know, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. And it does seem the case that it was tactical because Mesut Ozil was dropping much deeper than Aaron, and Aaron was playing with his back to goal. So it could have been tactical, but you don't really expect that. You know, we haven't seen that a whole lot this season. And it was a little surprising to me, but for me, Jack had a better game. And since we are on this topic, I think he did very well to find that cross to you know, assist Lacazette, because the quick give and go he played, he had to, you know, sort of alter his run because the ball was played a little too heavy. But he still managed to find a good ball, and of course, credit to Lacazette for that leap.
And Tony, you got any comment there, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I'd pretty much agree. I thought Ramsey was quiet. I wouldn't say poor. I thought he was very quiet. But it's also, that's never going to be the type of game that Ramsey shines in, because he's known for his late runs into the box and finding space. But if 8 defenders in and around the box, that space just isn't there, and it doesn't matter who you are. If that's your type of game, you're probably not going to find the space in there because it doesn't exist. So I thought Ramsey was quiet rather than poor. I don't think he'd done anything wrong when he had the ball. I just think it wasn't the type of game for him. I thought Jack was very good, and that probably won't surprise many people. But tempo, I thought he controlled the tempo. I can't remember him losing the ball too often. I can't remember it at all, but I mean, it probably did happen. And also the cross for the goal is exceptional. He's very good at that. That type of ball. As soon as he played that 1-2, it reminded me of our last goal, our third goal against Milan. He played exactly the same cross, and I think it was Kolasinac or Ramsey headed it straight at Donnarumma from a yard, and then Welbeck scored the rebound. And it's what I was going on about a few weeks ago when I was talking about assist stats. Jack could play that ball 10 times and 9 times it's a goal, but that against Milan, as I said, it took 2 chances, and suddenly it's like, oh, he doesn't get assists. But that type of delivery, I think Jack's very good at. But fair play to Lacazette to get up above their defenders, and it was a very good header as well. He had to generate the pace, which is always difficult. But no, I wouldn't say Jack was exceptional, but I thought he was good. I thought he was a solid 7 or 8 out of 10.
Okay. Look, and you boys have been a bit slack on it, but there hasn't been really too many big games. But I'm going to say yesterday or this morning for me was a big game. So Ozil watch, rating Tony for Ozil.
It's always going to be hard to find space in that kind of game, similar to what I said about Ramsey, but he drifted well, he made them move, he moved them across the pitch. I'd go 7 just because he didn't have a huge impact on the game in terms of goal scoring and stuff, but he was the, what's the guy, who's the guy that runs the orchestra, what's his name? The conductor. Ozil was a conductor.
Yep, okay. Okay. Schwinn?
Perhaps a little more generous for me, and that wouldn't come as a surprise to most people, but I thought he was very good. Of course, you know, no assists or no stats for him otherwise, but I thought he was instrumental, and I don't think the occasion fazed him at all, especially early on in the game. We saw some Atletico fans throw some shit at him, and you know, he just shrugged it off as if it was not a big deal. I think it was a cube of ice that was thrown at him, and he just picked it up, put it all over his face, gave him some comfort, and got on with his job. It is tough to find space in those games, and you know, when you have only Lacazette in the box at times, it can be hard. But you know, we saw him slaloming through. He was very good with the ball at times, and he also didn't shy away from his defensive responsibility. So I'll probably give him 7.5 or 8, as opposed to a 7 that Tony gave him.
Okay. That is our fence sitter once again, given 7.5.
For fuck's sake.
I've fucking created some dramas with that, haven't I? Okay. I didn't think he was too bad. He seemed to be everywhere. I don't know about conductor, but... but anyway...
I wonder why.
Conductor, fucking dead. I'll go 7 as well. I would like a little bit more from him, but yeah, it's hard in them games. You boys got anything else to add on this game? We want to get into some questions.
Not really. Are we going to preview United? Or?
Actually, just quickly while we are still on this game, going into the second leg, Tony, over there, what chance do you give us, mate?
I've seen a lot of people say that the game's over, we haven't made it to the second leg. And I've seen people compare it to losing 5-1 at Bayern and saying, oh, the tie's over before the second leg's even begun. I think that's bullshit. Look, we're still in this game. We've got one benefit in that it doesn't matter if they score. So we can afford to pile forward in a similar way to what we did yesterday. We need a goal. If we go 1-0 up, and I know it's a big if, they don't concede many at home, but if we go 1-0 up, then they have to find the goal, and they have to come forward, which isn't their strong point, and we may find space in behind. Their defence isn't the quickest, and they make up for that by defending very deep, so it doesn't take pace into it. But if they have to push up and find the goal, then that space becomes available. They're favourites. Of course they're favourites, but... This tie isn't done and dusted. All it takes is a goal to change. A goal in our favour changes the whole tie. A goal in their favour doesn't make a blind bit of difference. And if it is 1-1 and it goes to extra time, they won't come and attack in extra time because they know if we score and catch them on the break, then the away goal, they would need 2 in extra time. So I think they're not strong plus points. And as I said, they're favourites, but there is some plus points to going in there. I heard, as I was driving back, I was listening to radio, and and I heard Jack interviewed, and he didn't, so like, obviously he was disappointed, but he was like, look, it's halftime in the tie. They're in the driving seat, but it's not that bad. I think just because of the way the performance was, people are going on as if like we've lost 5-0. Had the tie been the other way round and we snatched a 1-1 like that, everyone would be going to Madrid quite positive. Oh, if we score a goal, if we do that. I think just the way the tie has gone has altered people's opinions. But to say it's over at this point, I think, lunacy.
Okay, I won't ask you for a prediction on it because I know you don't like giving that. But give us a percentage on where you are on our next game. Percentage of an Arsenal win.
Look, it's tough. They're favourites, so that, no, I mean, that takes away 50% straight away. But they're, look, people keep going on, they haven't conceded, I think, 11 games at home, and they've only conceded 4 goals at home all season in the league. But I think they've conceded more than that in the Europa League, and we happen to be playing them in the Europa League. As I said, they're not the type of team that will come and blow you away and score 3 or 4. So, and if they score 1, it doesn't matter. So I'd say maybe around a 30% chance. I don't know. I'm just picking a number out of thin air here.
Yeah, I'll put you on the spot.
As I said, it's not over. Well, even that, you could have given me since the final whistle to answer that. And I don't know, because just putting a percentage number on something that without any basis.
I'm just having a quick look. So, at home, yeah, they've been pretty solid. But, look, I don't want to start taking the piss out on leagues and stuff. But, obviously they're second on the ladder. They are a very good defensively team, very good defensively set up, I suppose. But, you've got Real Madrid, you've got Barcelona in that league. Apart from your Valencia, Sevilla, really, have you got many? Is it a league of attacking football, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say, as opposed to the English Premier League? Tone?
No, probably not. As I said, they are very good defensively, but if you look at the goals they've conceded in the Europa League, I think I saw a thing yesterday. I may be wrong, but I think 4 of the 5 games they've played in Europe, because obviously they're in the Champions League before that. Like, look, Chelsea went there and won 2-1 in, I think it was September. So that would be a good enough result to get us through. I think Sporting Lisbon are the only team that have gone there in Europe and not scored. So if you look at their league, they've only conceded 4 all season in the league. You go, wow, that's unbelievable. But if you look at the Europe, because they've been in 2 competitions, 4 of the 5 results they've had, or 4 of the 5 games that they've conceded in, would be good enough for us.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Because they were in the Champions League, that's right. Forget about that, so long ago. Schwinn, what do you think on it, mate? Heading to Atletico, what do you take out of this?
It's going to be a little harder than, of course, it was last night. They'll have Costa back. They might have a fullback back as well. I'm not sure what's the status on Felipe Luis or Juan Fran. They will be missing Rosario, so they'll have to do something about that and try and find another fullback if both those chaps are still missing. But it's not going to be an easy affair. Having said that, I remain very confident. Yesterday's performance, albeit it was at home, I think it was very, very positive. And if there's one thing for certain, that's the fact that Atletico will continue to sit back. That's the way they play. And that gives us a lot more time on the ball. We've struggled against teams that press us higher and take the fight to us. It's not as if we haven't struggled against stubborn defenses, but when you have the ball, there's more chance of making stuff happen. I'm praying to the Lord, every Lord, that Mkhitaryan will be back, because that will definitely help us in the attacking third. So I remain confident. I'll probably give us a higher chance than 30%, as Tony said. I'll probably go for a 50% chance, if I'm honest. I think we have a very good chance for all the reasons Tony laid out. It's all about carrying this momentum with us. And of course, there's a game on Sunday. So let's see what sort of a hurdle that will be. I'm not even sure what sort of a team Arsenal's going to field out for that sandwich between these two important ties. So it's going to be tough, but I'm not at all convinced to count ourselves out.
Yeah, look, I don't write anyone off. We're going in. The boys will be pretty confident they can get the job done. that away goal did hurt us. Mkhitaryan will be a good addition if he is back. I would have loved, and like all of us, would have loved to go there 1-0, but it is what it is. So my worry is that 51 minutes to score, and I do get, though, they went into that 10-man and they went very defensively, 8 men back behind the ball. I suppose the next leg will be a different game, be different tactics used. So, yeah, we can get the job done. How confident am I? I'll never say never. I am a betting man, but I wouldn't be betting my house on this one. Probably 20% chance that we can get the job done. Boys, we'll get into some user questions, because I just had a quick scroll through the questions while you were talking. A lot of them are based on this game, and then we'll preview the Man United game, if that's all good with you. So, MWA Gunner, Tony, he just says, ah! That's all he says. Vish, for you, Schwinn. Why the hell can't our defenders not remain focused for 90 minutes? We played a brilliant game, yet our defence is our Achilles heel. How do we score 2 goals and keep a clean sheet in Madrid when we couldn't score against 10 men? That's what I was just saying, wasn't it?
Yeah, momentum. I think momentum will be key. Even if, you know, the game on the weekend doesn't go well, which might be because of, you know, a lot of rotation, I think we have a lot to be confident of after the first leg. I know we didn't, you know, leave a mark on the score sheet, especially after Atletico going down, but we created chances and we created decent quality chances. And as I said, if there's one thing for certain, that's the fact that Atletico will continue to sit back. That gives me some solace, you know, in the fact that we can rely on our attacking players more. As far as our defense goes, that's no new news. You know, that's happened before. We've spoken about not being set up to defend, and that remains the case. However, that one mistake will overshadow the whole game. And I think we wouldn't be speaking about this mistake if we had gone on to bag a late winner. So it's harsh and it's cruel. Football is a cruel game. Atletico were, you know, we learned that early in the game yesterday, and we were reminded late on that football can be cruel. But I'm positive. I'm quietly, and you know, I'm definitely positive for what we can do at the Metropolitano. And there's going to be a certain someone from this podcast who might be turning up there to support the team. So, you know, let's see how that happens. Every time I've been for an Arsenal game, we've never lost except the Champions League final. So. Ooh, that's a bad one.
Are you going, are you?
I'm trying. I'm desperately trying. I'm supposed to be in France later this, well, early next week. So I'm trying to get some transportation and accommodation sorted, but seems likely.
What do you say? You last time you went and seen, you lost.
Not the last time. The only time I've seen us lose was Paris, the Champions League final. Otherwise, every time I've been, we've won.
So you're a good luck charm or you're a bad luck charm?
Well, I'm a bad luck charm when it comes to the big games, so that's nothing to be happy about, is there?
Don't fucking go then.
Gimli, I'm not going to pass up on this opportunity.
Gimli, if you're available for the next podcast, mate, there'll be a spot there in Schwinn's seat, buddy. Because he's not fucking coming back if we lose. Okay, Vish. Vish says, Tony, on Sunday, we'll go this one. Where's this atmosphere been all season at the Emirates? The fans were incredible. I hope we can replicate this in Madrid with a one man short in the 10th minute. How the fuck couldn't we score? He's still going on about that. Basically talking about the atmosphere, mate. Oh, anyway, yeah. He's mentioned my mate, Xhaka. What's he say? Was it a lack of composure like Xhaka's rugby? Fuck. Fuck off, you fish. Righto, go, Tony.
Yeah, look, the atmosphere was very good, but it's a sign of the tide. Like, people go on about, like, Liverpool is the prime one. Oh, look at their atmosphere against Roma. Look at that average Premier League game at Liverpool. The atmosphere is shit. It's the biggest myth in football that the Liverpool good. It's night. Is this atmosphere. It says we're playing Southampton at home or Burnley at home or what, and it's the same with us. It was a big game, and the atmosphere was fitting for it. But that doesn't happen every week at any club, and it's not every week at Arsenal. I agree the atmosphere should be better from game to game at Arsenal, but you're never going to get that every week. It's never going to happen. It doesn't happen anywhere else. There's times in games, like I said to the bloke next to me, that after 20 minutes, the atmosphere for that 20 minutes was the same for the 5 to 10 minute period against Liverpool when we was 2-0 down and made it 3-2, and the roof nearly lifted off when Ozil scored to make it 3-2 in that game. And it was like that for pretty much the whole of the first half yesterday, or at least the first 20 minutes. So I think we do create that atmosphere at pockets during games, but not for the whole thing like we did yesterday. But I just don't think it's realistic to expect that that every week for 90 minutes. It doesn't happen anywhere.
Okay. Schwinn Cullum McKay says, do you think we will be able to come back from this? So, yeah, defensive record. I don't think it would be enough. He's saying, unfortunately. We did touch on that, though. So I won't go into that because we did touch on it. Brad's, the original Brad's, are you guys shocked that Wenger didn't change formation during the game? Maybe go 4-4-2 and put Welbeck in the box with Lacazette to have more men in around him for the crosses. Schwinn?
I don't have the questions pulled up on me, but is he asking whether we're shocked that he didn't do it or he did do it? Because that's basically how we played.
Are you guys shocked that Wenger didn't change formation during the game? Maybe go 4-4-2 and put Welbeck in the box with Lacazette to have more men in the box for the crosses?
Yeah, I mean, so it is Dint. And, I mean, that surprises me because that's basically what we did. You know, I mean, I've spoken about, and Tony's obviously spoken about, the fact that formations are redundant. It's all about roles. And when we push our fullbacks high up, then they're the ones providing the vert, not Mesut Ozil or Welbeck in yesterday's case. So, you know, Ozil tucks in inwards and drops a little deeper to come in centrally, while as Welbeck adds a body in the box. And I think that's basically what happened. So I'm not really sure what Brad's is on about. You know, it may not be very vivid off the ball, you know, when we're defending or when we're trying to counter press, then we go back to a 4-2-3-1. I agree with that. But when we're attacking, you know, I think we do that. And I think Welbeck did on occasion get an occasional header in from open play. And I think that basically underlines the fact that we did have two strikers up top.
Yeah. You got any on that, Tony? Because I've read that question about four times. It's got me buggered.
Well, no, I mean, I kind of get it, because what we tend to do is, it doesn't work so well with Ozil, but what we tend to do is, if the ball's on the right, then Welbeck tucks in to effectively make it a two up front. Like, whoever's on the opposite side basically tucks in. Mm. I can understand where the question's coming from, because in the second half especially, a lot of our attacking was down our left, which was the side Welbeck was on, which meant he was wide a lot. But then it's the job of whoever's on the right, which was Ozil, to tuck in and make it a two up front in that sense. And to be honest, Ozil's never really going to do that. I don't think changing shape would have been the right idea completely, because if you look at the players had on the pitch, it would have meant Ozil was an out-and-out right winger. I'm assuming Ramsey and Xhaka in the middle and Jack on the left, which would never really work anyway. And then if you look at the subs, you say, well, maybe Iwobi for Jack. But again, Iwobi is an out-and-out left winger. We've had our thoughts on that a million times on this podcast. And I think everyone pretty much agrees that it doesn't work. So to change that, you know, wouldn't have really made sense. I can see what he's getting at, and I think had we attacked down the right more, and on the instances we did attack down the right, it was as if we had two strikers. But because when we attack down the left, obviously Welbeck's the one out there, and Ozil doesn't tuck in as well, or Ozil takes up a 10 position rather than a 9 position, it maybe looked at times like, you know, it was only one up front. But I mean, where they were so camped in, I think we had enough players in the box, which is unusual for us. We usually only have 1-2 players max in the box. But every time we did get it wide, regardless of side, whether it was left or right, we seemed to have 3-4 players in the box at all times, which is more than what we could usually ask for. So I don't think saying going two up top wouldn't have wouldn't have necessarily got more players in the box.
Well, that was back on the on Monreal and Bellerin. They were type of, you know, coming up, way up, and they were used as the boys to cross it, so the rest could obviously get in the box, wouldn't it?
Well, you need to create the overlaps, because as I said, they were defending with a bank of eight pretty much. So if their fullbacks don't overlap, then you've got, say, it's Welbeck wide, just to make an example. You've got him wide, and he can either cross it from in front of a weight, which is pretty much a waste of time, or you can try and get him behind with a fullback on the overlap, or create space by using a dummy runner or a third man run. It just gives you options. I thought it was actually quite clever yesterday in that it was very rare that both Hector and Nacho, and it's been one of my complaints for a long time, that fullback should work in pairs. One goes, one stays in general.
Mm.
And we usually have an issue that they usually both go, but yesterday I think they worked that pretty well, and to be honest, ended up costing us for the goal because Nacho was way deeper than he should have been. But I thought we actually worked on that quite well yesterday, that they worked together. They worked in a pair, that one went and one stayed.
Mm-hmm. Big Bad Wolf says, what an absolute missed opportunity that was. I have to agree, mate. Shree says, how do you rate the atmosphere in the stadium? Well, we touched on that. It was apparently a great atmosphere, so Tony said, and by our fans, which is really good. Do you think it was the best Lacazette performance in an Arsenal shirt yet? Tony, you said yes, but you're saying best ever in an Arsenal shirt?
His best performance in an Arsenal shirt. It's nowhere near the best performance ever in an Arsenal shirt, but it's Lacazette's best by an absolute mile.
Yep, okay. RC or... Yep, Zupra Bob. Do you think this result will have mentally broken us even before we play the second leg? Will the team have already given up hope? Also, how would you set us up to play for the next leg tactically? And what are the key strategy messages to the players? I'll go with Schwinn, but I will come back to you, Tony.
For the first part of the question, I don't think it's going to have us, you know, mentally defeated, because we've been here before. You know, as Tony said, this is typical Arsenal. This is nothing new for us. As horrible as it is, we're used to this. So, and this doesn't take away any of the motivation we have since Arsene announced his departure. So I don't think it's going to have us mentally defeated. It is a tougher task. So, you know, that does have mental ramifications. But I think we are well suited to this sort of a game and to this sort of a situation. As for the tactical setup, you know, there was a lot of talk about a back three before the first leg kicked off. And I spoke about the fact that we shouldn't play a back three for the first leg because it's at home. However, if Mkhitaryan is still unavailable, I don't think it will be a bad decision to go with a back three and add another body, you know, in defense. It will help us play the ball out a little more, I feel. And considering that, you know, we will be camped in their half for most of the time, it will give us that assurity when it comes to defense as well, because they will have Griezmann and in all likelihood Costa who'll be probing. So having a third man back there will do us some good. We've seen Rob Holding step up. I don't know if we go for a back three, will it be Holding or Chambers? I would rather go for Chambers on current form. But, you know, we have a game midweek this weekend as well. So there will be rotation there. So it's an interesting question. But I would like to see us go with a back three if Mkhitaryan is missing.
And Tony, you want me to reread the question, mate, or you got it?
Can you reread it, please?
Okay. So do you think this result will have immensely broken us even before we play the second leg? Will the team have given up hope? Also, how do you set up play the next leg tactical, and what are the key strategy messages to the players?
I don't think it would have broken. I think in a way, as stupid as it sounds, I think the players will be a little bit pleased because the level of performance was very high. I don't want to, the result was negative, of course, but I don't want to lose that we actually performed very well. And so obviously the players are not pleased overall, but they'll think that we play well here. If we play like that, there's not many teams that will fancy playing us and coming to beat us. And if we reproduce that level of performance out there, which I don't think we will, but if we do, then they'd be confident of going through. And I think that's what will be in the players' minds. And if it's not, that's what will be drummed into them. Do that again and you'll be all right, which I think is true. In terms of how we set up out there, obviously, I spoke about a back five earlier in the week, but I'm not sure because they'll do the same. They'll have the eight behind the ball and they'll obviously have two up top because they'll have 11 men. I think as long as the fullback work in the pairs that I've just spoke about, so if one goes, the other stays, or obviously when they're defending, they all stay, I think we'll be all right. So I probably would go for the four just because it gives us that extra attacking player and we do have to score and it doesn't matter if we concede one. So I think we will stay at the four. I think if Mkhitaryan isn't back, it'll be the exact same lineup. If he is back, it causes a problem. It's a good problem, but it causes a problem because I don't know who drops, who plays where. I think you'd probably go Ozil 10, Mickey right, Welbeck left, and Jack misses out, I'd assume. That probably makes more sense, although I'm not a huge fan of Mkhitaryan on the right. But it probably works better than any other option, really.
Then you've got an option off the bench with Jack too, and I like that option.
Oh yeah, look, I mean, if Mkhitaryan's back, you're going to have an option off the bench anyway, because whether he's on the bench or whether Welbeck's on the bench or whoever's on the bench, there's going to be another option.
But if
Mkhitaryan's back, I think the formation will stay the same and Jack misses out. Welbs plays left, Ozil 10, Mickey right, and them two will interchange a lot with Lacazette up front. So I think that's how up. I don't think we'll change.
Okay, Clay Conservative says, so many missed opportunities. Got to give credit to Oblak. He was on point. Could have put the game to bed before half-time. It was very assuring to see Arsenal look so dangerous against that defence. So it's not all negative. I have to agree to a little bit. Look, Oblak, we definitely gave credit to because he was outstanding for them and Swin and myself gave him man of the match. I do worry though, but it was that, you know, that we just, I look at any other team and look at any other game, Swin, and I think to myself, would any other team, a Chelsea, a Man United, a Liverpool, if another their opposition had gone to 10 men, they would have put two or three on them?
It's fair to assume that. I definitely, you know, agree on that for Liverpool, but Chelsea and Man United, I'm not very convinced. You know, they're also of that same fabric where they like to sit back and catch teams on the break. But on an average game, you expect the team to win when the opposition is a man down. You know, I think this game showed their strength very well when it comes to sitting back and defending, and I think it showed our weakness even more so when it comes to being vulnerable on the counter. So, you know, it was one of those things where the most important aspects just showed, and it just didn't work out well enough.
Okay. Seth says, Tony, why is Aaron Ramsey so overrated by our fan base? It's like a cult.
I don't think he is. I
was thinking exactly the same when I read the question. I was thinking, is he overrated?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, for me, he's not. And as everyone knows, I'm not a numbers man, but his numbers this season have been unbelievable. Probably rival anyone in Europe that plays a similar role to him. If you look at his role, you compare him to maybe a Pogba or a Vidal. We had this discussion a few weeks ago. And I think when you compare him to them guys who play similar positions, you can't start comparing him to a De Bruyne because he doesn't play the same role. But when you compare him to the guys that play the same roles as him, Rakitic, arguably, I would assume, and I'm pretty sure that Ramsey's numbers are better than theirs. In terms of do we overrate him, I think obviously he was the boo boy a few years ago. And I think some people have taken up on that opposite way, just because they rate him and because everyone else is saying he's bad, they have to go over the top in how good they think he is. But I think that happens with a lot of players. You'll get some people that tell you Jack's awful and other people that tell you he's world class. You get the same with Xhaka. You get the same with any player that's been a boo boy. You'll get the opposite where people go way too far. Even Hector, he's a boo boy at times, but then there's other people that say he could be world class. He has the potential to be the best in the world. For me, that's taking it too far. But I think it's just, you get the same with all players, that wherever someone gets criticised, there's also going to be someone that goes the complete opposite way and maybe goes a bit over the top. But I don't think on the whole Aaron Ramsey's overrated by our fan base.
Yeah, look, 21 matches, 7 goals, 7 assists. You know, a rating, they've given me an Opta rating of 7.4. I think he's been really good. I'm not going to compare him to Mo Salah because Mo obviously plays a different position. I've often said, I wonder whether Ramsey, how he'd go is on the right wing, because he loves to get in behind them players with his pace and that. But one thing I did think today, and I was actually having a discussion with a mate, we were thinking Wales players or footballers who have come out of Wales, he'd have to be the best there is, isn't it?
Nowhere near.
Really? Okay. You want to name me a couple? Name
Brian Gibbs.
Of course, yeah. There you go. Fuck, it didn't take long. Because I was thinking that today, yeah, I didn't even click fucking Man United. Okay. Schwinn.
N5. Should I talk about Aaron?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, mate. No, it's just I was having a conversation, mate, today, and we were talking about players coming out of Wales, and we were actually thinking that he was probably one of the best, but Tony's just said Giggs, so yeah. So I have to agree with that one, yeah.
And Bale,
yeah.
Bale, of course. Yeah. Bale, speed.
Yeah. Getting off track now. Okay, N51AW, also at Rocky Tarian. He's also actually doing us a little intro for next season, so looking forward to that. And it's brilliant how guys come, or our listeners come to us and offer to do something. So I really appreciate that, mate, and thank you for your support. But he has a question. How is Mustafi still in a job?
It's a shocking answer. I mean, I don't have one, because if you look at all of our center backs right now, it's just a mess. You know, from you need a good group of players, you know, who can come in, do a job, who are obviously your starting players, who you can bank upon week in, week out. And when you look at our center back position, that's just far from the case. You know, we've spoken about Koscielny's Achilles. We've spoken about Callum Chambers' inefficiencies. We've spoken about Rob Holding and how he lacks a bit of experience to play week in, week out at the top level. And it's shockingly, it's just Mustafi who, you know, is probably in, you know, the right age, but his decision making is just god awful. You know, even yesterday, I mean, of course, Atletico players, you know, were going down easier than whores, but even yesterday, Mustafi kept on coming in from the back, and that's basically what he knows, to be the aggressor. And there are times when you need to, you know, not go in for the bait, and he just never stops. For the goal, I think he was very unlucky. I think Tony spoke very well about his positioning and how he should have been positioned better. But at the same time, I think it was Nacho Monreal's positioning that was much more suspect. But again, at the very end, I think, you know, he slips. He does get a nick on the ball, and, you know, the ball still lands up in the roof of the net. But I think it was very, very unlucky for him to slip at the very end. Having said that, he needs to either, you know, better his game, and I think there's a question on that as well later on from a new listener, or he needs to leave. You know, he tried to leave earlier this summer, this past summer. We know his family's based out of Milan, and he's just had a baby girl, so, you know, obviously he wants to be with family. But we need to make sure that if he is going, then there are reinforcements brought in, because our current defensive system and center backs are nowhere close to where they need to be.
Yeah, I agree with everything you say there. Got nothing to add. Zach says, Tony, some stuff on Maitland-Niles. Like, where do you think you see him fitting into the Arsenal team, and where will he play in the future?
It's a tough one, because he is naturally a centre midfielder, but he hasn't ever impressed in the centre midfield for Arsenal. He was, when he came on for Elneny last week against West Ham, he was okay to good. He didn't excel. He wasn't bad. He's looked good at fullback at times. I don't know if the club see his long-term future there. I wouldn't mind him converting him to a right back. I think he has every strength to play at right back. He's very fast. His positioning has improved a hell of a lot in the last 6 to 9 months. He can use the ball well, which is important for a fullback at Arsenal. He can pass the ball. He's quite skillful and quite tricky if you isolate him one-on-one. And he has played at right wing in the time, so we haven't seen much of it, but his delivery is quite good as well. I'd argue he's one of the better of crosser of the balls at the club. So I wouldn't mind at all seeing him converted into a right back. I think it could solve a lot of problems. I don't see him ever having a future as a centre midfielder at Arsenal. Okay. I could be wrong, but it's just based on what I've seen. I think there's a few attributes that he lacks to be playing there. I think he's quite sloppy on the ball at times, and obviously, and that's a crucial position. I think he likes to get ahead of the ball too much as well. And it depends who he's playing alongside. But if you say he likes to get ahead of the ball, then you're comparing with Aaron Ramsey, and if Ramsey stays, Maitland-Niles isn't taking his position for a good 5 years at least. So. For me, I can't see him ever being a starting centre midfielder for Arsenal. As I said, I wouldn't mind him shifted to a right back as a proper position instead of a makeshift.
Are you a favourite of a manager who gives young players a go, or are you more of a fan that says, I just want the 3 points? Like, how important
I want to win.
You want to win. I'm the same. Yeah.
Like, brilliant. Look, it's always good. And to be honest, it does get you behind the team. And I mean, again, I don't know what it's like from abroad. But when you're... Look, Tottenham always sing one of their own about Harry Kane. He's not. But it still gets them... It gives them that extra impetus. And we've been like that for a long time with Jack. And I'd still say in the ground that we are like that with Jack. That he gets that 10% extra raw. He does something and... I don't know, Ramsey or Danny Welbeck does it exactly the same thing. Jack gets that extra 10% raw from the ground. So it is always nice to have some homegrown boys who've come through the club. But I would prefer to win than have 11 homegrown players.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm the same. And sometimes I think, is that selfish as a fan, or is it just... You're a passionate fan. You want your team to win, because I often see, like, you know, ex-players, they tweet out, oh, it's great, and I get it. You know, they say, oh, it's great that such and such had his debut and whatnot. So, yeah, I thought maybe I'm a bit selfish because I just want to win. Okay, what do we got for you, Schwinn? How much from... Sushant, I think that's how you say it. Thank you. I haven't heard of Sushant before. Is he in your
Brilliant. Listener? He is. He's someone I connected with recently on a massive Arsenal group on WhatsApp. He's a bloody good bloke. So thanks for chiming in, Sushant. Good on you, Tez, for getting that right, too. I was not expecting that.
I'm all over this shit, boys.
And can I just say that when Tony said that he's not one of their own, the text alert was at the perfect time and was the perfect amount of comedy in that text alert. So don't edit that out, Tez.
Okay, I'll leave that there. Okay, so he says, how much Arsenal will improve defensively with a new manager, or we need two new centre-backs and a goalkeeper?
We do need reinforcements, and I think there's a universal acknowledgement, not just around the fans, but also around the club, that our defensive setup is nowhere where it needs to be. It's tough to say how much these current players will improve, because we don't know who the manager is going to be. So, of course, you know, that plays a big part. But I cannot see any manager, even if you bring in someone like Simeone, who is out and out defense. I don't think even he could come and do a job with these guys at the moment. You know, I haven't seen anything from Mustafi in particular, and we all know Koscielny's on the decline. So I think reinforcements are a must. And you know, I've often said that it's the center back position and then the winger that I would concentrate on before I would bring in a new goalkeeper. I still stand by that, but center backs do remain the priority for me.
Tony, you got any add on that one, Mike?
I think we would improve, maybe not individually, but I've always said we're not set up to defend, so our system maybe would change a bit. Under I know it was a big error, but under a manager that draws it into them, that defensive line, which for me is the key error for the goal yesterday. As I said, I know Koscielny's mistake is the howler, but the defensive line is something that happens over and over again. And I think under a manager that drills that into them, that doesn't happen. And then you eliminate a lot of mistakes. So if that defensive line is correct, suddenly it doesn't matter that Welbeck loses the ball. Koscielny doesn't have the chance to kick it in his own face, because if they go one in front, one behind, the ball's gone over Koscielny, but Mustafi just heads it out or heads it to Monreal and we start attacking again. So I don't know how much the players would improve, but there'd be a lot less individual errors because they wouldn't be in the position to make them errors. The fact is, with that Koscielny mistake, and it is a huge mistake, he should never be in the position to make that mistake anyway. So I think if you improve stuff like that, which is done as a team, it doesn't make Koscielny a better player. It doesn't make Mustafi a better player, but it puts them in a situation where that it isn't possible to make that error. And I think that's more likely where we'll see an improvement rather than an individual player just suddenly improving. And it could be the case where people go, oh, Mustafi's not making mistakes anymore. He's improved so much. And it probably isn't that. It's probably just the positions we put him in which allow him to make a mistake will be reduced the amount of times that happen.
Mm. So you want to, getting on this, you got new couple of centre backs, goalkeeper. What's your thoughts there?
Me and Schwinn have differed on this pretty much every time the question's up. I think we need one centre back, unless we change to a back three. I know Swin's often said about buying one and one young, but I think if we're looking at young, we've got three of them there that in Holding, Mavropanos and Chambers, who, unless you're going, like I mentioned on the last podcast, De Ligt, and I know he is young, but I don't count him as young because he's a £50 million centre back. I don't count that as a young signing. So for me, I think we need one centre back. I think we need a keeper, and I think it's probably nailed on. We'll get a keeper, and I think we need a winger, and they would be my three priorities in that order. And I know Schwinn's would be two centre backs and a winger, so we differ on that, but we have done pretty much since time began, I think.
Look, I'd obviously love, and I've said a new goalkeeper, but when we were mucking around the other week on the podcast, I said Oblak, and I think it was sell three players, bring three players in. And I got thinking, it was fucking a good question. I can't remember who it was by now, but otherwise I'll give you a shout out.
It was Aaron. Aaron Sandu.
Okay, so it was a great question, but it had me fucking thinking for days because... And just put it, you guys, there's a young keeper, and I was talking about it from in the Serie A from Spell, Alex Merritt. Now, I don't know if you've seen much of him, but he is a brilliant young keeper. You'd probably get him for about 6 to maybe 10 million. Napoli are looking at him as well at the moment. Do you... I'm not going on him as much, but do you guys think a young keeper for a season under Czech and then maybe he's the future? Or would you prefer a Butlet or a Pickford or something like that, Tony?
Not that Butland or Pickford. But I want a keeper to come in now. Our problem this year is Czech hasn't been good enough. By having someone learn from him a year, we're still left with a keeper that isn't good enough for that year.
Mm.
So... Butland's a name I'd potentially look at, but there's a lot of others. And then even if it is someone that goes into the team, say, look, let's just use Butland for the sake of argument, and he definitely wouldn't be my first choice. But he would start, improve the team, and he can still learn from Czech. Whereas if you bring in someone young and they're learning from Czech while not playing, then we're still at the same disadvantage we were this season.
And who we got? We've got Martinez, he's out on loan. And who's the other young bloke we've got in the squad?
Matt Macy.
Macy, yeah. So, and you made your thoughts pretty strong on Macy. He wasn't really up to League 2, I think you said, didn't you? So.
Yeah.
Schwinn, what would you prefer? Oh, you don't even prefer a keeper, do you?
No, I mean, just to be clear, Tony talked about a young center back, and, you know, before he brought up De Ligt last week, I mean, you know, I said De Ligt the week before, because when I say young, I'm not talking about someone who, you know, who's a Mavropanos or Holding, essentially. You know, I'm talking someone who can deputize for Koscielny, because I think Koscielny will remain at the club. next season. I want someone who can replace Mustafi, and then Koscielny and him can start, and then De Ligt, someone like De Ligt, can deputize for Koscielny every week, you know, sometimes for the midweek games or whatever. But for the goalkeeper, I think it's tough because, you know, ideally I would like to bring in a goalkeeper, but you have to keep in mind, you know, what financial restrictions we have. And if I had to bring in three players, then a goalkeeper wouldn't figure on that list for me. There were some, you know, reports yesterday. I don't want to name the account, but, you know, Tony and I were talking about him, about how Timo Horn has decided not to trigger his release clause. And things seemed a little odd to me. So I was wondering whether Tony would like to clear that up for our listeners, because that has set Arsenal Twitter on ablaze, because, you know, it seemed like we were very much in for him.
Yeah, I will do that. But you saying you're doing it with budget in mind and then picking a 50 million alternative centre back, that for me, that doesn't fit into any budget ever, which is what the point I was getting at. I don't count him as a young centre back because of the price tag. So if you're buying him as a second choice.
I did say that I wasn't sure whether his release clause was 50. I mean, it's been reported, but I did say it during that episode, during that podcast, that let's assume for now that it's not, because, you know, we've heard that to be the case, but I'm not sure whether that's true or not. If that is the case, then of course he doesn't fit into the budget, needless to say.
Yeah, it is. That's why I said I wouldn't include him as a young. I fully understand what you mean with that type of player, but it's not, as I said, spending 50 million on an alternative centre back just doesn't fit anywhere with any club except Man City, pretty much.
Of course.
In terms of Timo Horn, it's a bit of a tough one, because he had a relegation release clause of, I think it was 5.7 million. It was given, I think, probably 6 million euros. Him and Jonas Hector, who's German national team player, who also plays for Köln, they don't want to trigger their release clause. So a clause in a contract is between the player and the club. Any clause that's on the player's side, they can choose to turn down out of goodwill, and the club don't have to accept that, but they would want to, because it's in their benefit. So if a player refuses to take his wages one week and says, I didn't earn them, the club can accept that. And so obviously Horn is worth more than the 5.7 million. Hector's worth whatever more than his relegation release clause was, and they are going to go down. But both players have said, we don't want that clause. That clause isn't active, so you don't have to accept if that bid comes in. Of course, the club still could, but they won't, because they know their players are worth more than that. It's pretty much as simple as that. If the clause would have been active, and we bid 6 million euros, they would have had to accept. Now they don't. So his price goes up a lot. I don't know. What I don't know is, I think he had a release clause anyway. So he had a relegation release clause, non-release clause. I don't know what that is, and I don't know if that's still active. So it could be the case you could still get him, but for maybe 15 to 20 million instead of the 6 million you thought you was going to get him for. I don't know about the case on that. So it could be a way of him saying, look, I am going to leave. I just want you to get more money for me. The problem that gives himself is the clubs would be more willing to go for him for 6 million than they would for 15 to 20, for obvious reasons. I was speaking to Jack, the plug AFC, I'm not sure what his Twitter is, but the plug, whatever. And he seems to think that Horn is potentially, not to us, but Horn could potentially still go. I think, just based on what I know about players in general, either he's extremely loyal, which is unusual in football, or none of the clubs that have come in for him or the rumoured interest that his agents have heard have been clubs that he would particularly care about. So the likes of us, Liverpool, who have been rumoured, haven't shown the interest. So he's done that to look loyal to the club and it pay lip service to the fans. But in reality, it's because no one's really shown an interest in him. That's what I would expect. I could be wildly wrong, but that's what tends to happen. If you know the interest isn't there, you at least make yourself look good.
Okay. Sorry, I was just checking out that account, shall we? That we better not name.
Yeah, we'll let that be. Just to avoid confrontation.
Yeah, I couldn't have fucked arguing that, Clint. Okay. I think I did have a couple of tweets Eddie's way earlier. So, okay, now I want to get on to Eric Bakey. He says, and this goes into our Man United preview, what do you guys think our team will be for this weekend's game v United? Hoping to see Nelson and Nikitarian. Get a good run, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going, so I don't want to see a reserve team, but I would completely bomb off the game if I was us. You've got to be sensible and look to what's coming ahead. I'd be absolutely amazed if Ozil travels. I don't think he'll leave his house. I think you have to play some players. I mean, if I'm looking at the team now, I would probably go Cech, Kolasinac, Chambers, Holding, Maitland-Niles, I guess, at right back. But I wouldn't be surprised if he plays someone at centre back and puts Chambers right back. I just don't know who that someone is. This is where the Elneny injury kills us, because Elneny definitely would have played. One of Jack Ramsey and Xhaka has to play. Who it is, I don't know. Aubameyang plays. I think Welbeck probably plays. I mean, it's very difficult to name a lineup. I don't think both Eddie and Reece Nelson will play. I think one of them will start. Probably Reece, because we have a striker. We don't really have a winger. Iwobi will start. I'd imagine it'll probably be Aubameyang with Reece, Iwobi, and probably Welbeck behind him. And then it's just the two in the midfield that's very difficult. As I said, I think one of Jack Ramsey and Xhaka will have to start. And if Mkhitaryan's back fit for Thursday, one of them won't be starting on Thursday anyway. So it won't be a big deal. So if you go on that case, it'd probably be Jack you'd start. And then you've got to look for someone to hold alongside him. And as I said, it would have been Elneny, but with him injured, it's very hard to put a name in that place.
Would you rather see Lacazette come in with Aubameyang?
No, usually yes, but no, because
give him confidence going into that next game.
I don't think he'll be getting confidence, because the reality is we're probably going to lose, and probably going to lose quite heavily, and probably won't create many chances with the team we're likely to put out. So if he stands there isolated for 90 minutes, probably getting kicked a fair bit by the likes of Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, that don't give you any confidence. And he's never going to be more confident than he is after coming off yesterday. No. I mean, he was all smiles coming off the pitch yesterday. And although the result wasn't great, I can understand it from a personal point of view. So he's never going to get higher than that. And especially with the team we're likely to put out, it's not going to do him any favours. So, no, I don't think he'll travel either. He may be on the bench. In my opinion, in my team that I picked, he definitely wouldn't start, and I don't even know if I would take him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Schwinn, what do you run with, mate?
I have to agree. I mean, we're still in this Europa League semi-final tie. It's not over by any stretch of the imagination, and we don't want fatigue, and we don't want an injury. So keeping that in mind, we have to, you know, try and fit some young players and some reserve players, squad players and reserve players into the 11 and see if those boys can do a job. I'd like to sit deeper and, you know, maybe try and stifle them. I don't know if you'll do that, but, you know, when you have a lot of inexperience in the pitch, then that might just be your only go. As for Man United, I will say on United, they showed a little bit of class this past week when they put out an article, respecting Arsene Wenger and, you know, calling him a worthy adversary and everything like that. So that was nice to see from them. It will be his last game at Old Trafford, and I would like for him to get a victory, but, you know, it's not going to be easy, especially with a rotated lineup. So you have to have one eye on the game, on the Atletico game, maybe even both eyes on the Atletico game, and just let this one be fed, you know, to the dogs.
I caught a piece of the Mourinho fucking press conference, you know. If he's happy, I'm happy. If he's sad, I'm sad. What the fuck is that lad on? Like, dead set. Did you see it?
I did, yeah, and... I mean, I think you know, no one's gonna make bones about the fact that they don't like each other. You know, it's not a friendship. It's not even respect. I think that they have for each other. I mean, I don't know, obviously, but from the outsider's point of view, it seems they really don't like each other, and there's almost hate there, for different reasons, albeit. You know, Arsene expects respect for what he's done to the game, and Mourinho only respects results, which is fair to each their own. But I think Mourinho, there's also an element of jealousy there, because Mourinho has struggled and he has been fired from many jobs despite performing there in the past. And we all know about Arsene, who's, you know, who's had his own will at Arsenal Football Club. So I think there's an element of jealousy there. But it's still nice to see him, you know, say positive things as Arsene bows out, even though, you know, he might not mean it. But there's no point, you know, poking the hornet's nest as a legend is on his way out.
How I'm just having a quick look at our fixture. So Man United, then we're back at over there at Atletico Madrid against them. How important, and I don't want to put a dampener on things, but how important does that Burnley game come after the Atletico Madrid if we top a fail in the Europa League? Because I'd still like to think that, you know, going into next season, we hold on to a Europa League spot, because slipping back to seventh, I suppose, is pretty fucking dismal.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, it's of no importance, because, you know, if we make it through the Europa League, then we don't have to pay too much attention to it. It also is at the Emirates, if I'm not wrong. I think we played them already at Turf Moor earlier this season when Alexis Sanchez had that late goal. Yeah, so you know, yeah. So that'll be that. That's exactly, that's Arsene's last game at the Emirates as well. So you know, it's that's. Yeah. Right, there's Huddersfield, I think, which is at the very end.
Huddersfield, yeah, so they're away. So, yeah, okay, so it's the last game, so.
Yeah, so it's not all bad. It's not all doom and gloom so far. You know, next Thursday is going to be obviously the biggest game of the season so far, just like this past Thursday was. But ideally, Burnley game will not have a lot of weightage on it. Also, I've grown to agree with Tony in the fact that, you know, if we do finish seventh, it's not as bad as, you know, it's not any worse than finishing sixth. You know, of course, there's going to be less money in it for us, but it's going to be nominal in that case. And we are going to go through a rebuild with respect to the summer. So, you know, it's not all that bad.
Yes, that is true. Listen to us. Fuck, mate. Dampener of the fucking... Perk it up, boys. So, prediction for United on us, tough. Tony says we're going to get smacked. Schwinn, prediction?
Let's go for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. You know, I hope we turn up. Sorry, Tony?
Wow, he's confident. I will take any bets on a 1-1 draw.
And money for
that's
Jim.
Why I'm not a betting man.
Money for
honestly, tweet us. I'll give you odds on 1-1. Fine, no problem.
clock end underscore talk. You can tweet us. Look, I hope we just turn up there with there's no other way, a B grade team, and just say, go and, you know, that's what we think of you guys. Go and get fucked. And Alvanga walks back up and sits in the grandstand, has a couple of beers, and watches it go. Just enjoy it, mate.
That'd be beautiful.
Because, like, you know, we've got nothing to play for. I know Tony's going to the game, so he wants to see some type of football. But yeah, I'm starting.
Well, no, I would prefer. Look, I don't take football selfishly. I'd prefer us to get dicked and play a full strength team against Atletico and win than win when I'm there. And I'm still not decided on Atletico. I'm probably not going to go, but there's a chance I do. But I don't look at football selfishly, so I'd rather us get smashed by United and win against Atletico when I'm not there than us see us win 5-0 and then we lose 5-0 in Madrid. Like, I support Arsenal, I don't support myself.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Aren't we a fickle, aren't our fans, aren't we a real fickle mob? I noticed, and I've been away for the week, but it was the Champions League, I got back on that day. And I watched Roma play Liverpool. And I don't want to go on about Roma too much, but if you guys cast your mind back, probably a week or two ago, we were all talking about a Roma centre-back being... wouldn't it be great to have him at Arsenal? And the fans were like, oh, you know, we should go on. And every transfer window, we seem to be linked to him. he didn't have the greatest of games against Liverpool. And what do we read on Twitter? Fuck, we don't want him. Don't have him. That's a Mustafi. I thought, geez, we're fucking quick to judge, eh? I still rate, and I'm talking about Manolas. Tony, you rate him?
Yeah, look, I think any defender can be made to look bad in the wrong system. And this is what I was saying earlier, that if we sort out the system and we sort out the defensive stability as a whole, as a group, then our players would naturally look better. Manolas didn't have a good game, but he was also put into a system or a situation that was horrible, not only for him, it didn't suit any of their defenders. I have no idea why they'd done it. But it's like anything. Look, Messi, arguably the best player ever. If you put him in a team that only plays long balls, and then when they do get forward, their aim is to get it wide and whip crosses into the box, he's not going to look great. And he's, again, probably the best player ever. It's the same with defenders. If you make Manolas defend on the halfway line against the Mo Salah, even against the Theo Walcott, you know how it's going to end, because any ball over the top, he's not going to win that race. Mm-hmm. So I think this is where systems can make players look a lot worse than they are. He had a bad game, yes, but under a better system where they defend deeper and play more to his strengths, he doesn't look anywhere near as bad as he did whatever day it was, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. It wasn't the best. Champions League, who do you predict there for a winner? Now that you've seen a couple of games?
Same as I said in the last 16, Real Madrid.
Real Madrid, take it out. So they will go through on bye. Who are you? Liverpool, Real Madrid?
Yeah, that's my final.
Yep. Schwinn, you're probably the same.
Yeah, it has to be at this point. I mean, I wanted Juve to take it this year, but obviously that's not going to happen. And Madrid are just way too strong when it comes to European football. Liverpool might have a shout, you know, the way they're playing. If they are able to get through the second leg, they might have a shout. But if Ronaldo and Co are up to it, then there's no stopping them.
Okay. I'm still fucking confident, boys. I'm so fucking confident that the little team from Rome will do it. They'll get through this second leg against Liverpool, and they'll make Ronaldo look like fucking chump.
I will take any bets on Roma being through. If anyone's interested, at @_talk, DM me.
Actually, you said that against Barcelona, didn't you?
I don't think I did, because I don't think we spoke about it. But also, no one made any bets. So,
okay. Right, boys, we'll be back after the Manchester United game Monday.
Yeah, or the game Sunday. Yeah, we'll be back Monday.
We'll be back Monday. So thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You've been listening to the Clock End Talk. You can follow us at @clockend_talk. And thanks, boys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Cheers.
See ya.